Chapter 12. Shakespearean and romantic, if Leonce looks like Napoleon, and Paulina like a modern spinster, and Hermione was chosen, all agreeing that age was of no consequence, but Gwendolyn urged that instead of the mere tableau there should be just enough acting of the scene, to introduce the striking up of the music as a signal for her to step down and advance, when Leonce, instead of embracing her, was to kneel, and kiss the hem of her garment, and so the curtain was to fall. The antechamber with folding doors lent itself admirably to the purpose of a stage, and the whole of the establishment, with the addition of Jarrett the village carpenter, was absorbed in the preparations for an entertainment, which, considering that it was an imitation of acting, was likely to be successful, since we know from ancient fable that an imitation may have more chance of success than the original. Gwendolyn was not without a special exultation in the prospect of this occasion, for she knew that Herr Klesmer was again at Quetcham, and she had taken care to include him among the invited. Klesmer came. He was in one of his placid, silent moods, and sat in serene contemplation, replying to all appeals in benignant-sounding syllables more or less articulate as taking up his cross meekly in a world overgrown with amateurs, or as careful how he moved his lion paws lest he should crush a rampant and vociferous mouse. Everything indeed went off smoothly, and according to expectation all that was improvised, and accidental being of a probable sort until the incident occurred which showed Gwendolyn in an unforeseen phase of emotion. How it came about was at first a mystery. The tableau of Hermione was doubly striking from its dissimilarity with what had gone before. It was answering perfectly, and a murmur of applause had been gradually suppressed, while Leonce gave his permission that Paulina should exercise her utmost art and make the statue move. Hermione, her arm resting on a pillar, was elevated by about 6 inches, which she counted on as a means of showing her pretty foot and instep, when at the given signal she should advance and descend. Music, awake her, strike, said Paulina Mrs. Davilow, who, by special entreaty, had consented to take the part in a white burnous and hood. Herr Klesmer, who had been good-natured enough to seat himself at the piano, struck a thunderous chord, but in the same instant, and before Hermione had put forth her foot, the movable panel, which was on a line with the piano, flew open on the right opposite the stage, and disclosed the picture of the dead face and the fleeing figure, brought out in pale definiteness by the position of the wax lights. Everyone was startled, but all eyes in the act of turning toward the open panel were recalled by a piercing cry from Gwendolyn, who stood without change of attitude, but with a change of expression that was terrifying in its terror. She looked like a statue into which a soul of fear had entered. Her pallid lips were parted. Her eyes, usually narrowed under their long lashes, were dilated and fixed. Her mother, less surprised than alarmed, rushed toward her, and Rex too, could not help going to her side. But the touch of her mother's arm had the effect of an electric charge. Gwendolyn fell on her knees, and put her hands before her face. She was still trembling, but mute, and it seemed that she had self-consciousness enough to aim at controlling her signs of terror, for she presently allowed herself to be raised from her kneeling posture and led away, while the company were relieving their minds by explanation. "A magnificent bit of plastic that," said Klesmer to Miss Arrowpoint. And a quick fire of undertoned question and answer went round. Was it part of the play? Oh, no, surely not. Miss Harleth was too much affected. A sensitive creature. Dear me. I was not aware that there was a painting behind that panel, were you? No, how should I? Some eccentricity in one of the Earl's family long ago, I suppose. How very painful. Pray shut it up. Was the door locked? It is very mysterious. It must be the spirits. But there is no medium present. How do you know that? We must conclude that there is, when such things happen. Oh, the door was not locked. It was probably the sudden vibration from the piano that sent it open. This conclusion came from Mr. Gaskin, who begged Miss Mary, if possible, to get the key. But this readiness to explain the mystery was thought by Mrs. Vulcany unbecoming in a clergyman, and she observed in an undertone that Mr. Gaskin was always a little too worldly for her taste. However, the key was produced, and the rector turned it in the lock with an emphasis rather offensively rationalizing as who should say, it will not start open again, putting the key in his pocket as a security. However, Gwendolyn soon reappeared, showing her usual spirits, and evidently determined to ignore as far as she could the striking change she had made in the part of Hermione. But when Klesmer said to her, we have to thank you for devising a perfect climax. You could not have chosen a finer bit of plastic, there was a flush of pleasure in her face. She liked to accept as a belief what was really no more than delicate feigning. He divined that the betrayal into a passion of fear had been mortifying to her, and wished her to understand that he took it for good acting. Gwendolyn cherished the idea that now he was struck with her talent as well as her beauty, and her uneasiness about his opinion was half turned to complacency. But too many were in the secret of what had been included in the rehearsals, and what had not, and no one besides Klesmer took the trouble to soothe Gwendolyn's imagined mortification. The general sentiment was that the incident should be let drop. There had really been a medium concerned in the starting open of the panel. One who had quitted the room in haste, and crept to bed in much alarm of conscience. It was the small Isabel, whose intense curiosity, unsatisfied by the brief glimpses he had had of the strange picture on the day of arrival at Offenden, had kept her on the watch for an opportunity of finding out where Gwendolyn had put the key, of stealing it from the discovered drawer when the rest of the family were out, and getting on a stool to unlock the panel. While she was indulging her thirst for knowledge in this way, a noise which she feared was an approaching footstep alarmed her. She closed the door and attempted hurriedly to lock it, but failing and not daring to linger, she withdrew the key and trusted that the panel would stick, as it seemed well inclined to do. In this confidence as he had returned the key to its former place, stilling any anxiety by the thought that if the door were discovered to be unlocked nobody would know how the unlocking came about. The inconvenient Isabel, like other offenders, did not foresee her own impulse to confession, a fatality which came upon her the morning after the party, when Gwendolyn said at the breakfast table, I know the door was locked before the housekeeper gave me the key, for I tried it myself afterward. Someone must have been to my drawer and taken the key. It seemed to Isabel that Gwendolyn's awful eyes had rested on her more than on the other sisters, and without any time for resolve, she said, with a trembling lip, please forgive me, Gwendolyn. The forgiveness was sooner bestowed than it would have been if Gwendolyn had not desired to dismiss from her own and everyone else's memory any case in which he had shown her susceptibility to terror. She wondered at herself in these occasional experiences, which seemed like a brief remembered madness, an unexplained exception from her normal life. And in this instance she felt a peculiar vexation that her helpless fear had shown itself, not, as usual, in solitude, but in well-lit company. Her ideal was to be daring in speech and reckless in braving dangers, both moral and physical, and though her practice fell far behind her ideal, this shortcoming seemed to be due to the pettiness of circumstances, the narrow theater which life offers to a girl of 20, who cannot conceive herself as anything else than a lady, or as in any position which would lack the tribute of respect. As he had no permanent consciousness of other fetters, or of more spiritual restraints, having always disliked whatever was presented to her under the name of religion, in the same way that some people dislike arithmetic and accounts. It had raised no other emotion in her, no alarm, no longing, so that the question whether she believed it had not occurred to her any more than it had occurred to her to inquire into the conditions of colonial property and banking, on which, as he had had many opportunities of knowing, the family fortune was dependent. All these facts about herself she would have been ready to admit, and even, more or less indirectly, to state. What she unwillingly recognized, and would have been glad for others to be unaware of, was that liability of hers to fits of spiritual dread, though this fountain of awe within her had not found its way into connection with the religion, taught her or with any human relations. She was ashamed and frightened, as at what might happen again, in remembering her tremor on suddenly feeling herself alone, when, for example, she was walking without companionship and there came some rapid change in the light. Solitude in any wide scene impressed her with an undefined feeling of immeasurable existence aloof from her, in the midst of which she was helplessly incapable of asserting herself. The little astronomy taught her at school used sometimes to set her imagination at work in a way that made her tremble. But always when someone joined her, she recovered her indifference to the vastness in which she seemed an exile. She found again her usual world in which her will was of some avail, and the religious nomenclature belonging to this world was no more identified for her with those uneasy impressions of awe than her uncle's surplices seen out of use at the rectory. With human ears and eyes about her, as he had always hitherto recovered her confidence, and felt the possibility of winning empire. To her mama and others, her fits of timidity or terror were sufficiently accounted for by her sensitiveness, or the excitability of her nature. But these explanatory phrases required conciliation with much that seemed to be blank indifference or rare self-mastery. Heat is a great agent and a useful word. But considered as a means of explaining the universe, it requires an extensive knowledge of differences. And as a means of explaining character, sensitiveness is in much the same predicament. But who, loving a creature like Gwendolyn, would not be inclined to regard every peculiarity in her as a mark of preeminence? That was what Rex did. After the Hermian scene, he was more persuaded than ever that she must be instinct with all feeling, and not only readier to respond to a worshipful love, but able to love better than other girls. Rex felt the summer on his young wings and soared happily. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.